From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. All this week, we're talking about how 4 more years of a Trump administration could affect Illinois in a number of different policy areas. Yesterday, we spoke about the federal workforce here. Later this week, we'll talk about abortion and immigration and funding for public broadcasting. Today, we're focusing on 2 areas with potentially the most significant money consequences for Illinois: education, specifically K-12 education, and later this hour, Medicaid. President-elect Trump and his allies have proposed a lot of changes for education, from how money is distributed to pressing states on hot-button social issues. Let's listen to a clip from a Trump campaign policy video.
Our public schools have been taken over by the radical left maniacs. Here is my plan to save American education, restore power to American parents. First, we will cut federal funding for any school or program pushing critical race theory, gender ideology, or other inappropriate racial, sexual, or political content onto our children. We're not going to allow it to happen. Next, I will direct the Department of Justice and Education to open civil rights investigations into any school district that has engaged in race-based discrimination. That includes discrimination against Asian Americans.
There's a lot more where that came from, and we're going to get into it now. Joining me is Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, one of the 2 big labor unions representing teachers in Illinois. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Brian. Good to be here.
Also with us is Robin Staines, president of Advance Illinois, which is a bipartisan nonprofit advocating for better education here. Robin, thank you for being with us.
Glad to be here.
And finally, Ben Superfine is a professor in educational policy studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's also senior director of the University of Illinois System's in-house think tank, the Institute of Government and Public Affairs. Ben, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I do want to mention we invited State Superintendent of Education Tony Sanders to join us on the show today. His spokeswoman responded with a statement, quote, "We are closely monitoring the president-elect's transition and any developments related to federal education policy. The Illinois State Board of Education remains steadfast in our commitment to advocating for and protecting Illinois schools, districts, families, and students. We appreciate your interest, but we respectfully decline an interview at this time." The state super may have declined, but you can always join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, Dan Montgomery, the IFT supported Vice President Harris in the election. I want to start with a temperature check. How are you and the IFT's teacher members feeling now that we're less than 2 weeks away from the second Trump administration?
Yeah, well, thanks, Brian, and thanks for having me on. Our members are hard at work. Everybody's back to school from winter break, and you know, that's kind of what our folks do. Whether they're teachers or support staff or, you know, in higher ed, wherever, they got their nose to the grindstone and things like that. So I know when, you know, the results of the election came in, and a lot of our members were rightfully, you know, concerned about the students we teach. And I think as a teacher too, you know, you really worry given what Trump and MAGA world focuses on in terms of culture wars. You worry about our LGBTQ plus and trans kids. You worry about kids from immigrant families. We saw that, you know, in his first term where, you know, kids like a lot of Latinx kids, for instance, whether their families were documented or not, were hesitant to apply to college because they were wary of getting caught up in a legal system, justifiably or not, you know. So there's bad effects that redound from the right-wing culture war on education and frankly, young people. But we're there. We're going to take care of kids like we do every day.
Robin Staines, Advance Illinois is, as I mentioned earlier, it's bipartisan, it's nonprofit, it's been around since 2008. So if my math is right, this is going to be the 4th change in presidential party that it's been through. How are you thinking about the incoming Trump administration?
Well, I'm sort of reminded that most, and I'm sure your listeners know this, most education policy and program really does happen at the local and the state level. That doesn't mean the feds are not a significant player on a number of very important fronts, and there isn't a lot of dollars. About 9 or 10% of the K-12 budget on average comes from the federal government. And so if they choose to change the ground rules for those attached strings, et cetera, that's not a trivial issue. But the majority of decisions about our standards, our curriculum, our programs, and the values that we want to bring to schools and to preschools and to universities, those things are largely set at the state level. So administrations come and administrations go, and some are more activist than others. But there's an awful lot that the state will continue to control regardless of who's in the White House.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that the administration says they want to actually do. And Ben Superfine, I thought maybe we could start with one that's gotten a lot of headlines, and that's abolishing the Department of Education. Trump actually talked about this on the campaign trail a number of times. There was a speech in Indiana, Pennsylvania, where he talked about giving power over education back to the states in his framing. Let's listen to that excerpt. This is from September 23rd, again, Indiana, Pennsylvania.
We're going to make it good. And you know what's going to happen is out of the 50 states, you're going to have 35 like different ones. Iowa will do good. A lot of the states will do very good. I can think of probably 30, 35 will be and 5 will be OK. 10 will be OK. You'll have 4 or 5 that will be terrible, but that's OK. We have to control it. But you'll have Idaho. You'll have Idaho will do a great job. They, you know, no debt, no this. No, they run a great state. A lot of places will have great education that can compete with Norway and Denmark and this. But we'll have certain places. And it's the same places like Gavin Newsom, who's a terrible governor. You'll probably have a problem in California. But what you do is you give it to the local communities and they'll have a great educational system. You don't want to give it to somebody like Kamala because she destroyed San Francisco and then destroyed the whole state. But reckless migration policy can change it very quickly and it can destroy everything.
Okay, we're going to fade as he abruptly pivots to migration policy in that speech. Trying to discern what the policy actually is. Ben, let's start with a baseline. What does the Department of Education actually do all day?
So the Department of Education has a pretty big portfolio of programs. It has about a $240 billion budget per year. It funds a variety of programs like the Title I program that provides money for high poverty schools, that funds things like instructional materials and textbooks or extra instruction in core subjects or professional development for teachers. It oversees programs funding the IDEA, which supports education for students with disabilities. So that provides special education services and materials and equipment and travel and transportation and so forth. And it has a massive student loan portfolio for higher education on top of that. So it has a variety of different functions that affect both K-12 and higher ed, many of them affecting what happens in the classroom on a day-to-day basis. Though I would also echo what Robin stated earlier, that states and localities control the bulk of what happens in education, particularly around curriculum and instruction.
This is not the first time Republicans have talked about abolishing the Department of Education. What is the backstory with why this has been such a bugaboo for decades now?
So the Department of Education was enacted in 1979 under the Carter administration. Republicans have been talking about getting rid of it, largely under the rhetoric that the federal government shouldn't have a hand in education, to give back to the states, on and off for several years since then. It seems at this point, at least to me, that it would be very politically difficult to get rid of the Department of Ed. Part of that is because of the massive portfolio of programs that it has. It would require an act of Congress at this point because it's written into federal law. Democrats would probably balk. It's rural conservative states are huge beneficiaries of the law, and it's far from clear that the Republicans would be unified enough in Congress to get it done with their slim majority or even willing to expend the political capital. And that's on top of the huge administrative and bureaucratic lift that it would take to shuffle around all the programs that the Department of Ed administers to the variety of different agencies that would be candidates to receive them.
Right. Like, Pell Grants and as you mentioned, some of the, you know, funding for students with disabilities, things like that. Robin Staines, can you speak to that, to the role of the, like, where is that money most felt in Illinois, for example?
First of all, I just want to agree with Ben. I think it would be very difficult to unravel that. It's been a big talking point for a long time, but I think it'd be very tough to do for all the reasons that he stated. So, you know, interesting to watch that. But the places, I mean, there are just huge Title I poverty funding, you know, Title II, which works on teacher training, is a $2 billion program. You know, the IDEA and special education funding, that's $15 billion. You know, probably less well-known, but also a lot of money goes into career and technical education. And again, just to underscore what Ben said, these are programs that are really enmeshed and matter a great deal to almost every district in the state and in the country. So again, would be to unravel or to disrupt that, I think would be deeply unpopular.
All right. Well, if that's...
Yeah, I would add, can I just add to that?
Please.
This is Dan. Yeah. It would be deeply unpopular in Trump country, too. I think it's still true that a majority of Title I funding goes to poor white rural districts, you know, in general, or if not a majority anymore, a huge amount. So I think I agree with both Robin and Ben that it would be very hard to do, but also politically hard because those districts are all getting federal money, too, that, you know, in places that were sort of pro-Trump.
All right, I want to play another. If that is maybe unlikely or one of the least likely things to happen, I do want to play some more tape of Trump then talking about other things he wants to do. This is a video again from his campaign produced in 2023.
Finally, I will implement massive funding preferences and favorable treatment for all states and school districts that make the following historic reforms in education. One, abolish teacher tenure for grades K through 12 so we can remove bad teachers and adopt merit pay to reward good teachers. We want great teachers in our schools. Two, drastically cut the bloated number of school administrators, including the costly, divisive, and unnecessary diversity, equity, and inclusion bureaucracy. Three, adopt a parental bill of rights that includes complete curriculum transparency and a form of universal school choice. And four, implement the direct election of school principals by the parents. It's all about the parents for their children.
All right, Dan, there's a lot there. We need to take a break in 3 minutes, but pick one or two of those things. Talk about what you heard.
I mean, to me, these are right-wing kind of MAGA world culture war talking points. He's not going to be able to abolish teacher tenure. It's, you know, generally it's a fixture of state law, and it doesn't have to do with, you know, protecting bad teachers. It really is the origins of teacher tenure are entirely in academic freedom, that you don't want the very thing that Trump seems to favor, which is you have your schools become political vortexes where there's a, you know, a political effort to come down on a teacher who teaches something someone finds, you know, distasteful, like, I don't know, maybe history.
Well,
let's
put it out there, because he talked about the, what did he say, radical left lunatics? I mean, talk about what your members are teaching in schools right now. Are they teaching radical left lunatics?
Okay. Yeah. To the previous point we're talking about, curriculum is a local, you know, there are state mandates around certain things and things like that, but generally curriculum is locally based, local school boards who are elected directly by citizens in their communities make decisions every day about what math curriculum they want to use or what they want to do, you know, what kind of requirements are going to be there for graduation in terms of credits in certain fields, you know, math, when do we start algebra, things like that. That's all locally decided, you know, and by elected school boards. A couple years ago, we had in 23 big school board elections in Illinois, and the kind of Trump vision as it was cast in those who ran under the Moms for Liberty or Awake Illinois banner, they lost big time. They couldn't win even in conservative places because people want their schools to be free from this culture war. We hear it time and time again. They don't want screaming matches, fighting matches at the school board meeting where they have to call in the police. They want, you know, serious, thoughtful adults to make good decisions for a rigorous, inclusive, challenging curriculum for our kids, a loving environment where kids can learn and be prepared for the world of work and being a citizen. So I think that's what we focus on. And I think, frankly, that's what school boards and administrators and teachers and staff are focused on in the main around Illinois every day.
All right, we need to take a break. We are going to continue this conversation, part of our series talking about what four more years of the Trump administration could mean in Illinois. We're beginning today with K-12 education funding. My guests are Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, Robin Staines, president of Advance Illinois, the nonprofit advocacy organization, and Ben Superfine, who is director of the Institute of Government and Public Affairs at the University of Illinois System and a professor of educational policy studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. More to come. We're going to stay on this topic for about another 8-10 minutes or so, and then we're going to move on to Medicaid. But again, 800-222-9455. We'll be right back. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking, as we are doing all week, about what the potential or the not potential anymore, what the second Trump administration could mean for Illinois. Today, we're focusing on education policy. A little later, we'll be talking about Medicaid. Those are two areas where there is a significant amount of federal spending that flows to state and local government, including here in Illinois. My guests are Ben Superfine, professor in educational policy studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and senior director at the Institute of Government and Public Affairs, the U of I System's in-house think tank. Robin Staines, president of the bipartisan nonprofit advocacy organization, Advance Illinois, and Dan Montgomery, president of the Illinois Federation of Teachers, one of the two big labor unions representing teachers in Illinois. 800-222-9455 if you have a question or comment about Trump administration education policy. Ben, let me ask you, we heard Trump in that clip before the break talking about favorable funding for districts that sort of follow his prescription on social issues. What leverage does the federal government have in terms of influencing education policy at the state and local level?
Well, it's one thing to be clear about in the front end is that the federal government cannot specify curriculum or instruction. There's a flat-out ban in federal law against doing so. In the past, the federal government has put in place incentive programs to incentivize states and localities to make certain kinds of changes in their state policy. So that's certainly a possibility. An example of this could be the Race to the Top Fund from the federal stimulus. One thing that Trump has also said that he might do is withhold federal funds if schools or districts teach about race or gender in particular kinds of ways. The most obvious route for Trump to do so would be through an Office of Civil Rights Investigation. OCR is housed in the Department of Education. They investigate violations of civil rights laws like Title VI for racial discrimination or Title IX for gender discrimination. At the end of his first term, his administration started to launch these kinds of investigations. They didn't end up really going very far as the Biden administration took over. And these investigations rarely result in taking away funds, but it could happen. I would expect lawsuits would pretty quickly follow if he were to do this sort of thing. His administration, if the listeners recall, faced trouble in his first term for failing to follow legal processes around ending DACA without establishing a sufficient reason. He would likely be on stronger grounds, particularly around gender, if he revised the Title IX regulations the Biden administration passed. These regulate sex discrimination. I would fully expect the Trump administration to do so. And if he does that, it's going to give him better grounds to try to influence what happens in districts and schools over teaching about gender identity, or even cases involving things like bathrooms or pronouns.
Robin Staines, what do you think of some of these ideas we've been talking about, either the Trump clip or anything that's come up since?
No, I would have answered very similarly to Ben, and I would also mention a couple of other things on the legal side with the Office of Civil Rights. One is how they might use that affirmatively, but also the role that it can play defensively, and when people are, go forward to file a claim, you know, this is the Office of Civil Rights is also designed to be a partner or an ally on that. So how it's used in both affirmatively where it chooses to file claims, but also the role in protecting rights that currently exist that may not be able to be changed during this administration. And then remembering all of this is happening in a legal environment where we've got a Supreme Court that has sent a number of messages out into the world that they are inclined to take a different approach to some of these, you know, issues around race, around gender, and around minority rights generally. So I think that is an area of real, I'm inclined to sort of be where Superintendent Sanders is, like, I don't want to shadow box to every possible worry, concern, or thing that might happen, but that's something that certainly we are attuned and alert to.
Yeah, no, and I definitely feel you on that. And I've struggled with this myself, even honestly, conceptually, this entire week. I kind of wonder, like, should we be focusing on, you know, it's so speculative at this point. It's all what he said. It's not what he's done. But then again, I know there are a lot of people in Illinois who are thinking deeply and are worried about this and are making preparations. So that is why we are exploring it this week. Dan, let me ask you, what do you think of Linda McMahon as Trump's pick for education secretary?
well, you know,
maybe we should tell us if anyone's been living under a rock, this is the former WWF, yeah. WWE wrestling impresario. Yes.
Interesting Netflix series on her family. I mean, it seems to be like to be nominated for a cabinet post in the Trump administration, you've got to have some, you know, awful sex scandal in your background. You know, I don't know what to tell you, and there's no discernible connection to education there. So we'll just move on. I mean, as folks, you know, kind of laid out earlier, the federal government, like, you know, the Department of Ed, things like that, there's a lot of money there, but I think mostly we've got local control. There's not enough federal money for special ed, for instance, but, you know, we've got local control here. I don't know. In the first term, you know, you saw Betsy DeVos really be really pushed hard on school choice. Trump mentioned that in the clip you played. You know, I don't see that moving in Illinois. It's something that has grown around the nation in recent years, unfortunately, to defund public education. But that's, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. You know, he nominates an education secretary who has no knowledge of education that I can see.
Yeah. Robin Staines, what about that? Dan mentioned school choice there. This is, you know, charter schools, public money for private schools, et cetera. That's kind of a big umbrella term. Do you see that getting a boost under the Trump administration?
I mean, again, I'm mindful of this gap between, you know, campaign rhetoric and then reality, which we also saw last time. There's a lot of talk about that. His last administration, I think the activity was much less than the talk would have suggested. And more to the point, you know, to Dan's point, we're a pretty mature state. We've talked and thought about, we've got, you know, charter school policies that have been around and discussed and vetted for decades. So I think that the federal perch is not the one that's going to really leverage those kinds of activities here. I suspect, again, that it's going to be, what does Illinois want for Illinois schools, Illinois children, Illinois families? And we're just going to have to continue to keep our focus on that.
All right. Well, maybe last question, Ben, to you. I know you've been following this sort of erosion of traditional barriers that limited tax money going to, you know, private, even religious schools. Talk about that and what you've seen from the Supreme Court and what, you know, could potentially be coming down the road in that area.
Well, historically, school choice has been led by the states, as Robin alluded to. Charter schools are prevalent around the country. There is an increasing movement for private school choice, which now includes religious schools. around the country as well, especially over the last 5 years or so. 28 states and the District of Columbia have at least one form of private school choice in place, and 12 states have some form of universal school choice. So that provides school choice to private schools for students regardless of characteristics like income or disability status. So it's becoming increasingly popular in the states. It would take an act of Congress to put in place a universal school choice program. This is something that Trump has particularly talked about on the campaign trail. Conservatives have been trying to do this for decades. There have been bills introduced in Congress, including in the most recent term. Given the action in the states, it's maybe possible, but there's pushback from groups like unions and even the public in some conservative states under recent ballot measures this year in places like Kentucky and Nebraska. The Supreme Court has been clearing the way for this for quite some time. They've ruled that funding religious schools basically doesn't violate the Constitution, that states can't exclude religious schools from choice programs that they choose to adopt. So it's possible, but again, states have been leading the way on this, and it would have to get through a pretty evenly divided Congress when it's unclear how the Republican constituencies are going to line up at this point.
All right. Well, now we know what Trump and his allies have said. We'll have to watch what they actually do. Dan Montgomery, Robin Staines, Ben Superfine, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks, Brian. Take care.